Dr. Patrick A. Wiltson, who's an associate professor in the Department of Socio-Medical Sciences at the Columbia University Mellman School of Public Health. He received his MA and PhD in psychology at NYU and completed an NIMH postdoctoral fellowship at Yale University. He's an expert on HIV/AIDS and ethnic minority MSM in youth populations. His work focuses on vulnerability, risk, and health-seeking behaviors, adherence and engagement in care, and community-based response to HIV/AIDS. So, Dr. Wiltson, please join us. Thanks.
So, thank you very much, and I appreciate those of you who stuck it out this last day and really almost second-to-last session, I believe, of the conference. So I just want to acknowledge the co-authors to this paper, Georgia Yela, Pato Heber, Glenn Milo Santos, and Jack Beck. This actually represents a sort of entry point for me into global HIV/AIDS research, and much of it has to do with my collaboration with the Global Forum on MSM, who sponsored this work. Those of you who are researchers within HIV, as I assume many of you are because you're in this session, know that the epidemic among MSM globally is one that persists, that has persisted over the past several decades. And this figure, I believe, does a good job of showing prevalence across regions of the globe. And what you can see from this this graphic is that prevalence rates are quite high globally. If you look at the colors going from sort of orange, purple, pink, and blue, they represent all above 6% prevalence in the different regions that are outlined there. And this is another sort of a different take on the same type of figure, but it gives you a bit of a better relative understanding of the epidemic for MSM in certain regions, where you can see the prevalence of HIV among all adults versus prevalence of HIV among MSM, and see that there are great disparities and that it cuts across the board for different areas of the globe. So we know that infection rates are continuing to rise globally, certainly in regions of East Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, South America, and also, of course, in North America here in the United States. And with that, we've gotten a lot more interest and calls for more prevention and treatment efforts, particularly targeting men who have sex with men. In this new day and age, though, we have really moved into shifting our focus into biomedical strategies and other novel strategies that are being tested and coming out of HIV prevention research. And some of this has to do with the frustration regarding some of the effectiveness of sort of our tested strategies like behavioral interventions, HIV testing, and consistent condom use. And while we are anxious and optimistic about all of the new technologies and strategies that are on the horizon and that are currently being implemented, it's also important to evaluate and get a better understanding of the extent to which proven strategies like condom use, like behavioral interventions, have been disseminated to and are accessible to MSM around the globe. And so I stole this. This is a picture that Kevin Fenton used in a presentation that he gave at the MSM pre-conference meeting that was sponsored by the Global Forum on MSM prior to the AIDS conference here in Washington, D.C. back in August. And I think I stole this picture because it, I think, does a really nice job of showing all the different strategies that we have available to us, from circumcision, condoms, counseling and testing, to more emerging strategies like pre-exposure prophylaxis, treatment as prevention, et cetera. And so we were, when I say we, I'm talking about the Global Forum on MSM, very interested in understanding how men who have sex with men around the globe have access to the varying strategies available to them through the prevention toolkit. But we're also interested in understanding how stigma and particularly homophobia act as an impediment to uptake of services. And so this is a diagram that Georgia Yela has put together in a document that's published by the Global Forum that really, I think, does a nice job of highlighting some of the linkages between homophobia and HIV risk. Here we're most interested in this presentation, I should say, we're most interested in stigma surrounding HIV and the social discrimination that sort of results from that stigma, and how that impedes access to interventions, to health programs and services that can be used to combat and treat HIV. So through a survey that was conducted, the Global Forum on MSM sought to explore perceptions of current and emerging prevention strategies. And to get a better understanding of access to strategies, we surveyed MSM globally as well as providers, so people who work in HIV/AIDS service organizations and social service organizations and community-based organizations that specifically work with MSM. And the point was to get perceptions around access to basic HIV prevention tools, and also to get a better understanding of the role of stigma, particularly external or societal homophobia, and then internalized homophobia, in impeding access and uptake of prevention tools. So the method used for this work was an online survey. And this survey was actually conducted back in 2010, the summer of 2010, prior to the Vienna International AIDS Conference and somewhat following that conference. So the survey was sent via email blast through the extensive networks of the Global Forum, as well as through other advertisements and sort of word of mouth. We had the survey available in five languages: English, Chinese, Spanish, French, and Russian. And you can see that most of the surveys were either completed in English or Chinese. Measures, which I'll go to in more detail right after this slide, but measures involved the use of more established measures as well as the creation of new measures. And what we were most interested in, at least for this presentation, were the measures around perceived stigma or external homophobia, internalized homophobia, access to basic HIV prevention strategies and emerging prevention strategies, which I'll define momentarily, and then also engagement in HIV prevention activities, exposure to different messages, and access of prevention services in different venues. The analyses that I conducted for this presentation were mostly frequencies, bivariate statistics, and then linear regression. So this tells you a little bit about the measures, which are important because obviously in a global survey you need to see how measures not only work in one language but across languages. And one of the constructs, perceived stigma or external homophobia, consisted of five items, and some of the example items are there. In the country I live in, most employees will not hire a gay man or MSM. Another example, in the country I live in, most people believe that a person who is gay or MSM cannot be trusted. And you can see that this measure exhibited pretty strong reliability across the different languages that we administered it in. For internalized homophobia, some of the example items were: I try to stop being attracted to men, and I feel it best to avoid personal or social involvement with other gay or bisexual men or MSM. And that consisted, or this measure had seven items, and also exhibited pretty good reliability across the languages except for Russian. And that could have been due to translation issues. We also looked at measures that weren't necessarily scales, but more indices to look at access to prevention and uptake of services. And you can see some examples there. For access to basic HIV prevention, we were mostly looking at accessibility of things like free condoms, lube, HIV medications, or ART, sexual education programs, also things like STD testing, other behavioral interventions. Emerging HIV prevention, we were focused much more on things like pre-exposure prophylaxis or use of ARTs for prevention. We also looked at post-exposure prophylaxis, circumcision, and things like information about serosorting and information about strategic positioning, again, thinking that these were more novel strategies that have really just emerged over the past few years as potentially effective tools for MSM to use in terms of preventing HIV. For HIV prevention activities, we were focused on engagement in things like one-on-one counseling or community activism focused on HIV prevention. In terms of messages, we were looking at different places where messages could be received, so radio announcements about HIV prevention, internet ads about HIV prevention, etc., and then venues in which HIV prevention services or tools may have been received, and included things like receiving condoms or HIV prevention tools from a community-based organization, also from schools, religious organizations, etc. And you can see the number of items for these different measures. All of the different categories were endorsed, and the means fell about in the middle range for most of these. So just to give you a little bit of an overview of who completed the survey, we had 5,066 people access the survey and complete questions. There was a great deal of regional diversity in the sample, though a large proportion of the sample came from Asia, which included Central, East, South, and Southeast Asia, and it was 56% of the sample. That was largely due to a extreme push midway through the survey to get more responses, and for many collaborators, and primarily Central and East Asia, sending the survey throughout their networks, and so that resulted in a lot of East and Central Asian MSM completing the work. We had about 14% from North America, 11% from Central or South America or the Caribbean, 7% from Australia, 6% from Europe, 4% from Africa, and 1% from the Middle East. The mean age of participants was about 34 years old, though we had a pretty nice range from 14 to 86. And you can also see that about a fifth of the sample was between 14 to 24 years old, about half between 25 and 40, and the remainder, about 28%, between 41 and 86. Most of the participants were male, and 79% of them identified as gay men or men who have sex with men. The remaining MSM who were also, there were a number of MSM who were also providers that represented about 14% of the sample, and then we also had non-MSM providers, so these were men, men or women who worked with MSM but who were not themselves men who have sex with men. 71% were HIV negative, while 22% were positive. The remainder were were unaware of their diagnosis. 35% said that they were low or middle income or working class, while 42% said they were middle income or middle class. And interestingly, the sample was relatively highly educated, with 99% having a high school education or more. And I should note that although it was highly educated, the majority of the sample did report being mostly of lower income, lower SES. So you have this somewhat paradox of high education but lower SES. So to go over some of the results, one of the things that we were interested in looking at was just access to some of these basic prevention strategies and how much these strategies were considered to be easily accessible. So free condoms and lubricants were identified as easily accessible to 44% and 29% of participants, respectively. So 44% said free condoms were easily accessible to them, while 29% said lubricants were easily accessible. About 50% said they had easy access to HIV testing, STD testing, HIV counseling, and STD counseling, or STD treatment, I should say, each. So that's not combined, but for each of those different services, about 50% said they had easy access. And then for each of the following, 30% said they had easy access, and that was to behavioral HIV interventions, HIV educational materials, mental health services, free or low-cost medical care, media campaigns focused on reducing HIV, and laws or policies to ensure access to prevention. In terms of emerging strategies, except for circumcision, which 50% of the sample reported easy access to, there was relatively low access to emerging strategies like PEP and PrEP. And I should just add that this survey was administered just prior to the release of the IPREX trial and the Partners in Prevention findings, which were late 2010 and into 2011. So many of these strategies wouldn't have been accessible because they weren't shown to be efficacious at the time. That is PrEP. PEP, of course, has been used, well, it's been available for a long time now, but as you can see from our sample, it wasn't accessed or available for use. So this, I don't know how large the print is there. I'm guessing it's pretty tiny, and I apologize for that. But this is just showing some of the differences in access across different regions. You can see that the lowest access to, this is basic HIV prevention, so things like condoms, lube, HIV counseling, et cetera, the lowest levels were seen among those coming from Asia and the Middle East, whereas the highest came from Australia, Europe, and North America. And these differences were significant. As far as emerging strategies, you see a very similar pattern where Asia, participants from Asia noted least access, whereas those from North America, Europe, and Australia reported some of the highest access. So in looking at the role of stigma, and particularly internal and external homophobia, and perhaps impeding access, we did a series of regression analyses that looked at predictors of access to different outcomes. And so this regression is looking at access to basic HIV prevention strategies. And I'm just going to go over the variables because I know that you don't have an idea of how they're coded, so I will tell you that. For this, and the same codings apply for the rest of the tables. So age is somewhat self-explanatory. The greater the age, the greater the access. We have a colleague, Glenn Milo Santos, who presented on specifically access to strategies among youth, because we did see very low levels of access and uptake to prevention among younger men in the sample. HIV status. This relationship is a positive one, showing that men who were HIV positive reported more access to basic HIV prevention tools. Here, HIV status was coded as 1 was HIV negative, 2 was HIV positive. For income, again, greater income, or this would be coded as 1, lower income, 2, greater income, 3, more, etc., but that was not significant here. Living situation, similar to income in terms of its coding, and we did see a significant effect there in terms of those who had a more stable living situation also had greater access. For global north versus south, we used a somewhat, and I'll just admittedly say, crude way of assessing global north versus south. Global north represented participants who came from North America, Western Europe, Australia, and New Zealand. And Global South basically represented the other regions, so South America, Eastern Europe, Asia, Africa. We had looked at this differently, but basically using sort of the data from the Global Forum, we decided to focus on this very basic way of looking at North versus South differences. And here you see that those in the Global South had less access as they were coded 2, Global North coded 1. And so the variables that we're most interested in looking at were external homophobia, where greater amounts of external homophobia were related to less access to prevention, and similarly for internalized homophobia, greater internalized homophobia was related to less access to prevention. And those were both significant. But I would encourage you to look at the betas, which are those standardized effect sizes, essentially, that show how strong external homophobia was in terms of its predictability or its ability to predict access to basic prevention tools. When we looked at emerging prevention tools like pre-exposure prophylaxis, circumcision, and PEP, We saw similar findings where external homophobia was linked to less access. Internalized homophobia did not show a significant relationship in this regression, though we did see variables including global north versus south and living situation significantly predict access. As far as uptake, we also saw findings around homophobia, internal and external homophobia, where external homophobia, and this is not in the expected direction, greater levels of external homophobia predicted greater levels of engagement in HIV prevention activities, whereas greater levels of internalized homophobia predicted lower levels of engagement in prevention activities. Still trying to figure that out, and I'd love to hear if anybody has ideas as to why that effect would be the external homophobia that is in the positive direction. But you do see a very strong impact of internalized homophobia on prevention activities engaged in. We also looked at prevention messages received, and again, we see external and internalized homophobia both predicting lower receipt of messages. So the greater the external homophobia, the less likely you were to say that you had heard HIV prevention messages on the radio or on the internet or in other venues. And then finally, we saw that internalized homophobia was strongly related to a lack of obtaining HIV prevention materials. So the survey clearly shows that access to basic HIV prevention services, including free condoms, water-based lubricants, and other behavioral interventions and education-based interventions, is not widespread among MSM or their providers. And that stigma and internalized homophobia continue to negatively impact MSM and disrupt the provision of these tools to the population. It independently, as you could see in those regressions, predicted access to basic and emerging prevention strategies, as well as uptake of prevention strategies. And so with these findings, we know that it's not enough just to continue to disseminate and to put robust efforts behind providing prevention tools to MSM around the globe, but also that we have to address stigma in our interventions, particularly those occurring at the policy and community levels. And that without those types of interventions and without stigma reduction efforts, particularly in places like East Asia and Africa, where we saw some of the highest levels of stigma, we will fail in ensuring that MSM have the ability to access prevention tools, including those that are newly emerging and that we are quite excited about, like pre-exposure prophylaxis and PEP. So just to go over some of the limitations, obviously this sample is not representative of all MSM or their health providers. We certainly lacked representation from men in the Middle East and in different parts of Africa, and one could say that Asia was overrepresented in the sample. Also, we used a web-based survey, which, of course, limits the sample to only those who were able to access the internet at the time of the survey. And also, there was some non-response in that we had participants that did not complete the entire survey. But there are also great strengths to this work, the primary one being that this is one of the first surveys to give gay men and MSM a voice. And it gives us a much better understanding of the services that are available to MSM and enhance a view of what gay men want and need in terms of HIV prevention. And in spite of our inability to get equal representation or to get a more representative sample of MSM globally, we do still have a very large global sample where we have hundreds of men from every region represented. So I just want to acknowledge the Gates Foundation, who funded this work, as well as the Global Forum on MSM Steering Committee, which provided a lot of guidance and consultation for this work. And There are extensive findings that are outlined in a report that you can find on the Global Forum website, which the link is there. So thank you very much.
Further questions for this presenter?
Yeah, the internal homophobia was one that was used by Ilan Meyer and some of his work, and it was work that was done here in the United States. I am blanking on the external homophobia, but we did use an established measure. They both, though, were slightly adapted by that steering committee, as well as through the quote-unquote brain trust of the Global Forum to have the language be more accessible to participants who would be taking the survey from different regions. And I should also say there was an extensive translation process engaged in that included forward and back translation and review by piloting by participants or of participants in all regions. Yeah, I agree with you, and we did use simplistic measures, you know, five items for one, seven items for another measure, but I think by virtue of the fact that we have such robust findings in spite of using measures that were, you know, not necessarily capturing a very nuanced understanding of homophobia, that we still see these effects, tells us that, you know, I would imagine that we'd see even stronger or larger impacts if we had even greater and more nuanced measurement. But I certainly agree with your point.
It looks like we're still in the 70s in many parts of the world.
Indeed we are. And that's what, I didn't show stigma by region, but as I mentioned, in terms of Middle East, Africa and the Asia regions, we saw extremely high levels. And so we're doing subsequent work to follow that up and see how it looks and to break it apart by region. That's right. The Global Forum is very, I guess you could say, well connected in terms of having partnerships with organizations in pretty much every region of the globe. Well, I shouldn't say every, but the key areas that were sort of shown on that map. So there wasn't an extensive sort of recruitment in terms of a lot of field-based work. It was an online survey, so it primarily went through an email blast that included the link. We also did some sort of advertisement on Facebook, on the MSM Global Forum webpage, as well as some of the partnering organizations for the Global Forum. So it really was, you know, the email blast and a lot of word of mouth after that. Yeah, you're right, and that is certainly a limitation of the sample and what we're able to say about these findings. But, you know, just to sort of build on the other point, I feel that if we had even a more diverse sample of those who maybe weren't connected to advocacy organizations or community organizations, and that's not to say that everybody was in ours, but certainly more than not. But if we had a more diverse sample, I think that we'd see, again, even sort of worse relationships, if you would, and that stigma impeding access, as well as some of our other constructs that we looked at. So There was another survey that has just recently concluded that the Global Forum did that was a follow-up to this work, and that was done, recruitment was done a little bit more extensively, and there were paper pencil versions of the survey given out to those men in regions where they may not have had access. So I think that those findings will be coming out most likely at the beginning of next year, and we'll look to see how they compare and contrast with what I presented here. Thank you.